In Play Radio, from a 40-20 to winners aplenty. We've got it covered.
The Rugby League World Cup is almost upon us, and it's come the time for us to have a little betting preview of the whole tournament in the company of Barry McDermott, as usual, but no Terry O'Connor. He's gone on holiday, so we've enlisted the help of Mark Wilson, who you will hear doing commentary on Wish FM, and you'll hear him doing Rugby League on Talk Sport, as well as working for William Hill's In Play Radio. Morning, chaps. You both well?
Yeah, good, thanks, Lee. You?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. You well, Mark?
Yeah, not too bad.
Excellent. Mark's sat next to me, Barry's on the line. First of all, just before we get into the outrights and talking about the betting, Barry, you must have been pretty surprised at the Italy game. I think everyone in the world was pretty surprised at the Italy game. Even the players. You saw the face of the players come off the pitch, and they looked a bit bewildered, didn't they, the England lads? It's not the end of the world, but it must take a bit of a... must dent your confidence a little bit when you're trying to warm up and build up to a big tournament.
Absolutely, it does. I can directly, correlate what's happened at weekend to an experience I had in '99. We played the Burley Bears over in Australia as a warm-up game, and we beat them 11-10. And we didn't win a game then until we'd been knocked out of the Tri Nations and we played against the New Zealand Maoris. And I don't think there was no small part played in that beginning game and warm up game against and virtually an amateur team. So yeah, it's a real kicking the doodads for England, and the preparation has gone well. And speaking to all the lads throughout the year, I know they were really happy. They were talking in a really positive way. Of course, they've been out to South Africa for a long period of time, and I wonder whether, maybe the questions are to be asked about whether that was right and relevant for the players that have played long, hard seasons and the time could have been used elsewhere. But irrelevant of that now, I think we've all got to support all the home nations. We've got to get behind them. We've got to give them the benefit of the doubt, and hopefully, this gets paled into insignificance. But I've got many of my good friends who've watched good amount of rugby league games say it's probably the most belittling experience and the darkest day of international rugby league. So I hope it gets forgotten about, and I hope that, in a month's time we're there talking about England and the other home nations doing really well in the tournament, and possibly one of them taking away the trophy.
Mark, Twitter was obviously alight with criticism of England and almost disbelief, wasn't it? It's not ideal in terms of building up from a corporate point of view and trying to sell tickets either, is it? Because the Aussies are the first game for England.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, isn't it? But I just wonder if the players, they've been away, as Barry said, in South Africa, were they looking ahead to next weekend rather than this weekend? Was it really a focus in their mind? Steve McNamara said they'd lost focus. Well, maybe they were focusing on something bigger on the horizon and just took their eye off the ball. In some ways, is anyone going to remember this if England get to and win the World Cup final? No one will really recall it. So, yeah, as Barry said, it's a dark day, but all the players, they have been saying how much they're enjoying being in the England camp now, whereas before, I think they didn't look forward to it as much. There seemed to be a real unity about them. And that's on and off the record as well. That's not players just saying the right thing to make sure they get in the team. That's players being honest. So I think England will bounce back, and I think it'd be silly to write them off too soon.
The outright betting then for the World Cup. No surprise to see that Australia are 3-1 on to win the trophy, take it back home. New Zealand are 4-1 second favourites. England are 6-1. And that's all she wrote, really. 100-1 and bigger the rest, which says something about the tournament. But it's going to be entertaining to watch nonetheless. Tonga are the 100-1 outsiders. The other home nations, Ireland, 500-1, 500-1 Wales, and 500-1 for Scotland as well. A lot of people, Barry, say this is kind of like Australia, Australia B, Australia C, Australia D, and so on and so forth.
Not far off.
No,
right.
They're not, are they, really? I mean, what about their team, though, the big team, the Australians? Is it 1-3? Is that one of the... would you just take that now and say, yeah, they've won it?
I think what you've got with Australia is you've just got a plethora of experienced, high-quality, high-achieving athletes that are very good at their game. An interesting strategy for England might be something that they tried in 1970, Lee. I've been researching, and in 1970 the trophy was stolen.
from Bradford, Barry, where I live.
Bradford.
No surprise there, mate.
No, and that would have been my next insult. and it is there now. If Steve McNamara wants to give me £100 in £20 notes, I can get that organised for him. But Australia are quality. And the one thing that they haven't got at the minute is the World Cup, because New Zealand won it in 2008, let's not forget. New Zealand have got some terrific stars, some world-class athletes, and Sonny Bill Williams must be the most talented sportsman in the world arena because of his, you know, his aptitude in a variety of different skills and different skill sets. But, you know, we've got some players. Australia have got some overachieving players in Thurston and Cronk and Cameron Smith, Billy Slater, Greg Inglis, who I'm going to talk about in a bit. You know, those types of machines, if you can get them well-oiled and performing right, then they can smash through any competition and any tournament. So, yeah, Australia look good, but it's not as cut and dried in that, and sport, and why the reason we watch sport is anything can happen, even if it's a million to one, Lee, as the saying goes, that one is still a chance.
Yeah. Matt, would you say Australia, just 1-3, put your money down now, £300 down, £100 to collect?
Yeah, but you'd have said that in the World Cup final last time. You'd have said it in the Tri Nations final when it was in Australia and New Zealand rolled them over then. So maybe there's a little bit of a question to be asked. Yeah, they've got all the players. There's no getting away from that. But I think the fear factor's going a little bit now. We're seeing the likes of Burgess and Graham going to Australia. And I think the Australians, Barry will know more about this than me, but I think the Australians have got a little bit more respect for our players now, Barry, haven't they?
Well, they do talk about the players that are in the tournament, in the NRL, and say that, you know, they must be the best in the English competition, as they call it. It's not the British Super League, it's the English competition. Yeah, they do. You know, the Australians are blessed with a natural arrogance that they harness and cultivate throughout their life, that when they get with a rugby league ball, and they get on a pitch and try to play against anybody that isn't Australian, that, you know, they have this overwhelming self-confidence and belief that the game is only going to go one way. I think there's, you know, we'll look at the four pools and the teams within that in a while, but I think there's some teams that could well cause some upsets. And Australia's, you know, Achilles heel has always been that slight bit of arrogance that, yeah, all we've got to do is turn up. I don't know whether they'll go into 2013 with the same attitude that they did in 2008, when, of course, they were beaten in the final, and the stage is all set for Billy Slater to atone for his mistake in that game in 2008.
Where would you be looking then, Mark, at the outright? So where's the value? Is it England? Is it New Zealand? You can't possibly think about any others, for instance, can you?
Well, no, you can't. I mean, you know, it's a three-horse race, isn't it, really? A lot's going to depend, isn't it, on who wins this first game next week between England and Australia, because the loser then, you would feel, would have to play New Zealand in the semi-final. So it's going to make life a lot harder, isn't it? It's not just losing on the day, it's what consequences that brings further down the line. So yeah. I think England have been written off a little bit, to be honest, and I think they are a live threat. I'd like to know what the mood is in the camp in New Zealand regarding this Sonny Bill Williams thing, because they've come in for a lot of stick about that, Barry. He got left out, well, he left himself out of the team, didn't he, and then announced he wanted to play, and they've left one guy out and put him back in. Do you think that'll upset the camp?
I think any team would have Sonny Bill Williams. You know, sometimes coaches and managers are paid to make decisions that are, you know, are for the good of the culture of, you know, effectively the group and the country, or whatever whatever team you're in charge of, whether it's a club or a country and an international team. You know, the decision had to be made. Stephen Kearney's, you know, decision was made for him on that grand final, you know, performance. He's just an amazing player. It's unfortunate for the bloke that misses out, but again, a little bit like the England-Italy game, if that contributes to New Zealand getting through and winning the final, it'll all get lost in the sands of time.
The best thing about that whole episode was the fact that he wrote his statement on his the notes on his iPhone and then tweeted it out. That's brilliant, isn't it? Don't do it on like professional. Don't get a PR director to do it for you or anything. Just do it yourself. Just type it out on your phone and send it out. Come on then, bits on the block then, guys. Who wins this thing?
The competition.
Yeah.
Admittedly, we've seen the worst of England. We've not seen anything of Australia. And on TV, New Zealand looked really impressive. And we look at this just on paper alone. On paper alone, you would say it's Australia's tournament. On paper alone, you would say it's probably going to be a Southern Hemisphere final with Australia and New Zealand. But games aren't won on reputation alone. So I'd like to look at the first game. I agree that the winner of Australia and New Zealand on week one has an excellent chance of getting through to the final.
Mm. Who are you going for, Matt?
I'm going to say England.
Okay, fair enough.
And that's a realistic bet, not a patriotic one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. The groups are a little bit contrived. Groups A and Groups B have four teams in them, and three go through automatically. Group C and Groups D, they play each other and amongst each other, and then one goes through. It's a little bit convoluted, but it's basically designed so we don't get any absolute blowouts in the tournament, which they've deemed can be a bit damaging. Group A then, who wins it? Australia 2-9, England 3-1. Fiji 8-1, Ireland 250-1. In Group B, New Zealand are the overwhelming favourites to win the group at 14-1 on. Samoa are 7-1, France are 40s, and PNG are 100-1. Then you've got Group C and Group D, which is a bit more interesting. Who wins the group? Tonga, top of the group, 1-3, Italy 9-2, Scotland 5-1, and in Group D, this is the closest, 8-11 for the Cook Islands, Wales are 6-5, and USA are 16-1. Barry, again, it does depend on that first game. You know, you got England. If England beat Australia, as you guys were saying, then they've got a great chance. But the price for England to beat Australia is the same as them to win Group A. Can you see anyone upsetting New Zealand? New Zealand surely are just nailed on to win Group B, aren't they?
Well, PNG and Samoa always have. You know, they always have a good dig at any game against Australia. So Samoa will have quite a few, dare I say it, Australian-born players playing for Samoa, and there'll be players who have represented either Australia or New Zealand and then have chosen to go and nail their colours to the Samoan flag. PNG, they're always entertaining to watch. Unfortunately, France had a dreadful defeat against against America at weekend. We think we've got it bad. And England losing against Italy, that, as you say, is probably a D or an E team for Australia, but the Italian team beating England probably isn't quite as significant as USA and them beating France. Albeit, we draw a line under that and say, right, now we're ready for the tournament. I think Scotland have got a good chance in C. I do feel that Wales, and speaking to, again, off the record and on the record, speaking to those Welsh lads, they feel that, you know, this is a good opportunity for them. Let's not forget the weather factor. It's going to be raining, it's going to be wet, it's going to be different conditions than the Tongans, the Cook Islanders, the Samoans, the Papua New Guineans will be used to. Not so much the Fijians, because they're nearly all from Rochdale anyway. So Fiji will have a good old time in Pool A. Unfortunately for my island team and teammates and former teammates and people who I know really well, they're going to have it all on in Pool A. So if I was to nail my colours to the mast now, I'd say England to win Pool A, New Zealand for Pool B, Scotland C, and Wales in D.
There's a bit of value in that, in those selections, to be fair. I mean, Scotland's an interesting one, Mark, isn't it? 5-1, the outsiders in Group C. As Barry mentioned, you got the weather factor. Obviously, you know, Danny Brough stands head and shoulders above everyone else pretty much in that side. But if he can lift their level, 5-1 to win Group C? Can you have that?
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, Italy are 9-2. Now, can Italy back up from the weaker? They play Wales, don't they, on the opening day of the tournament? That's going to be a massive game for them. So I think Wales will have the beating of Italy. There is value. And again, would you be wanting to take Tonga? Yeah, the big, strong lads, they'll throw it around. They'll play some great rugby. But at 1-3, I don't think I'd be putting the housekeeping on them. I think I'd rather have a little bit of value. I think that's a distorted market, personally.
I do as well. I looked at it initially and thought both Wales and Scotland were a bit big. Wales, you know, not the biggest price in the world, but 6-5 looks decent. Would you, what would you go for then in terms of the groups? Who would be your winners? You go England as well?
I go England, yeah. I think they'll beat Australia next weekend. I think New Zealand are a given. I agree with Scotland. I'm going to have to agree with him all the way through because I think Wales are...
Everyone does, don't worry.
I'd have Wales a little bit...
He's bad as O'Connor, isn't he? That's all he does.
It's just he rules through fear.
No fear. This Bradford-Leeds rivalry, I'm not frightened of him. I'll go Wales. I think Wales should be the favourites personally in that group, and they're not, so I'll back them on price.
Yeah, I get bravery, Barry, but it's all right when we're on the end of a phone line. It's when you don't meet him.
Yeah,
because he turns nasty then. The stage of elimination, you can back all the big sides if you like. England stage of elimination, Australia and New Zealand. So it's priced up like this. If you think England will go out at the group stages, which neither Mark or Barry do, that's 250-1. Quarter-final stage, they lose there, 14-1. If they lose in the semi-finals, the price is 4-6. If they're runners-up, you get a price of 2-1. And the winners is the same price as the outrights, of course. It's 6-1. Barry, if you're being patriotic, you're thinking that they could win the whole thing. I'm presuming you'd then be looking at, you know, the winners at 6-1. But would you be looking at runners up there as a stage of elimination at 2-1?
Yes, to back them each way, you're guaranteeing that they've got off to a good start. You're saying that the first game has gone the way that it should have done, and then they're either going to meet Australia or New Zealand in the final. So it's going to have to be a good run of games for England. Who says they can't do it? And, you know, the confident side of me says that England will do well. The realistic side of me says that they need to do well in that first game. And if they do, happy days.
Yeah. Mark, when you look at Australia, I mean, the value for backing Australia's group at stage of elimination is that they don't win the thing. So you've got 11-4 for them to be runners-up in the final. Then prices like 12-1 for the semi-final. It's a tricky market, that. New Zealand's interesting. Runners-up is 4-6, but the semi-final, I mean, if England play New Zealand in the semi-final, you know, you see no reason why that England couldn't win that game if a few things went in their favour as well. 2-1 for New Zealand to leave the tournament at the semi-final stage, it's not bad, is it?
Well, they're going to have to play a big name, aren't they? They'll feel they've got the rough end of the stick, really. Yeah. They will have to play a big team before they get to the final. And I think that 2-1 is backable because if England did win on week one, you've got to fancy they're going to play Australia. And in effect, you'd be getting Australia at 2-1 to beat New Zealand in the semi-final. So I would look at that as value. Yep. And I'd like Australia to be beaten in the final. I'd take that as well, 11-4.
Yeah, 11-4, yeah. Barry's already mentioned this market. You can back two teams to be in the final. The bookies here at William Hill are giving you 4-6 that it's Australia versus New Zealand, 6-4 that it's Australia-England, 12-1 that it's England-New Zealand, and any other permutation is 20-1. I think the guys have both pretty much said Australia versus England would be the final there at 6-4. Finally, we've got the top England try scorer market with Josh Charnley at the top of it, 5-2. Ryan Hall, 3-1. 9-2 Sam Tompkins. Tom Briscoe, 6-1. 8-1 for Callum Watkins. Leroy Cudjoe, 14-1. 16-1 for Zach Hardacre. Then you get to 18-1 for Roby and 20-1 and bigger. The rest of them, Barry, obviously you're looking at the top three in the market really there. And, you know, when we do these sort of markets for football tournaments, you often look at maybe, you know, not many goals winning it. But in this kind of tournament with some teams out there where big scores could be racked up, I mean, you know, you're looking at someone who can get on the score sheet and who's going to score tries consistently here, aren't you? Who would you be looking at that list that I've just given you? You know Ryan Hall very well, of course. 3-1 yeah. Versus Josh Charnley. Is that just a straight match bet, do you think, whoever scores most out of those two?
Particularly the wing. It's going to be an outside back that ends up racking up the points. And what side of the pitch that you play on can have a bit to do with it as well. I've said before, rugby league players like to pass from right to left. The ball is always going to go that way. If Ryan Hall plays on the left wing, you would assume that he'd play left and Charlie would play right. Predominantly, Ryan Hall's going to get more chances and opportunities to score. So if, from an England perspective, I think he's a good bet. I think he's going to get plenty of chances. What scores the games are, again, that's what was going to be one of my sort of shouts, really. If you look at New Zealand and who they play against, Sean Johnson from New Zealand has a good chance, as well as Hoffman, the fullback who played yesterday. for New Zealand, they, you would think that they would rack up points in the games that they've got, in the teams that they play against. There's mm-hmm. slightly more opportunities for them to score. France, PNG, Samoa. But for the actual outright top try scorer itself, I think that Greg Inglis is a good shout. He's had a phenomenal year for South Sydney, and I think he's a good shout for the top try scorer of the tournament.
What about England, Mark? Who would you pick out of that list there?
The worry, I don't know what Barry thinks about this, but he's got three really good wingers, hasn't he, in Charnley Hall and Tom Briscoe as well. Is there any danger that one of those will get rested in the group stage? That had always come into my thinking as well. He's going to go with his best pairing, you would think, of Hall and Charnley against Australia, but will Briscoe come in? And that puts me off almost backing one of those lads. What do you think, Barry, about that?
He's got three class wingers. He started with Briscoe and Hall this time. The game against Italy will have a small bearing, but he'll have had his first side. He'll have had that side for Australia in his mind for the last couple of months. There'd be a few question marks, but relatively speaking, he's got it set in his mind. And you're right, if you're going against or you're going into a tournament trying to back a player, he needs to be playing, he needs to be getting opportunities. So, yeah, that's a fair call, but I think that Charnley and Hall will probably get the nod.
Is there any value in Watkins? You'd see a lot of him at Leeds, obviously. He's a player that impresses me every time I see him. Do you think he's going to start and play throughout the tournament?
I think he's going to start in the next game. I don't think anybody were happy with the centres, the halves. There's lots of question marks around specific combinations and right edge, left edge. Callum plays on the right, and going on my theory of the left centre's going to get more ball, I think that depending on who gets that left centre's job, whether he's a provider, Daryl Goulding's a provider. That's what Josh Charnley got, good service all year from Daryl Goulding. If you've got somebody who's not quite keen to provide, he wants to see what's available for himself first. If he wants to see what's on for himself before he thinks about passing, then it could be all dependent on the man inside, Ryan Hall.
Let's finish off by looking at the first match of the World Cup, which is Australia versus England, 2:30 on Saturday on BBC One. Great to have a bit of international rugby league on the terrestrial TV, of course. 2-9 Australia, England 3-1. It's 25-1 the price for the draw, and that means England get a 12-point start on the handicap. We've spoken about a lot of the different bits and pieces, Mark, in terms of these two sides and the build up to it with what England have gone through. There's no chance that Australia will be taking England lightly here. You just wonder if England can reach that level of performance coming off Italy to equal Australia, because that's what they've got to do. They've got to do it, and they've got to do it for 80 minutes, haven't they, England?
Yeah, I spoke before about the fear factor. I think the fear factor is going now for England. They're not worried about Australia. They know they can compete with Australia. I'd be interested when the full markets come out here to have a look at the first half market on this one, because I think England will come out firing big time. They will be keen to put last weekend behind them. I think they will do. I like the handicap, plus 12. I think England will stick within that. It's going to be tight, it's going to be tough. I can see it being quite a low-scoring affair, and I think backing them on the handicap, certainly first-half handicap when that comes available.
Yeah, you'd be looking at, with it being around plus 12, you'd be looking at, you'd be looking at six, wouldn't you, I reckon? Yeah. England plus six in the first-half handicap.
I think when we've seen them meet before, they've generally competed really well and then got blown away in the last 20 minutes, Barry. That's where they generally fall down, isn't it, England, in the really big games?
Well, that's where, in the last decade or so, that's where it's cost us. It's bit us on the bum the last 10-15 minutes when, the game of, they play, it's almost a boring game that Australia play, and they play a very low risk, high percentage players, and it's all about, in simple terms, it's five drives and a kick, five drives and a kick, and they never get bored of that. Us Brits, all the home nations will play a style. There's two styles that teams are playing in Super League. There's the one where it's very structured, the one that Wigan play, where it's play for play for play for play, and then there's the one that the likes of Warrington play, where it's a little bit more ad hoc and it's a little bit more play what you see. So if either of those two styles of play crop up in this game, then it'll be a contrast of five drives and a kick to either the structured players or the ad hoc players. So again, in real simple terms, we need to take the chances and opportunities that present themselves. If England have to spend all game defending, then that's where those last 20 minutes could be costly. If England take their opportunities, score points when they're available, then as we believe, as we're hopeful of, it could be a great day for the English national team and the game of Super League.
I wonder then if, just reading into what you're both saying then, possibility of England half-time, Australia full-time at 6-1? That's the way these things could go, couldn't it? You know, off to a blistering start, that might be a way. And you've liked that bet in Super League a lot this season, haven't you, Barry? The half-time, one result, and then coming from behind to win it.
I could, but I wouldn't bet it here. I wouldn't bet against England because I don't want England to lose. So I don't. I'd rather lose money, which is not the focus of this podcast, is it?
No, you're supposed to bet with your head and not your heart, really.
It's impossible, Lee. Okay, it's impossible. There's always a number of different factors that go into which way you're going and when you're betting, and it's a little bit of what you feel, a little bit what you think, and then. You know, you're very good at bringing up some of the historical facts of around the particular teams and fixtures of from bygone eras.
I think there's a lot of misguided patriotism here amongst you two. This is Australia.
It's not misguided.
It's Australia.
If England had beat Italy 60-0 on Saturday, you'd be saying, "Oh, it don't matter. It's a rubbish. It don't count anyway."
If so my auntie had bollocks, she'd be my uncle.
Well, she
I think Barry's told me that once before.
Yeah. Man, I've met some of his family, Barry. I think that could be the case.
Yeah. Let's not forget that in 1954, in 1960, in 1972, Great Britain, as we were then, we lifted this great trophy. So let's cross
none
our fingers.
None of us were born then.
There's a bloke in Bradford who lifted it in 1990, but we don't know who he is yet.
So you both go in England?
Yeah,
fair enough. I like it. Okay, fair enough.
Who are you going for then?
Australia.
1-3.
It's a winner, isn't it? £30 on Twitter.
We'll find out at the end of November.
We will, yeah. When I'll be castigated for being not only wrong in my bets, but also a turncoat as well. Barry, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you again. Before the quarterfinals and the semi-finals, and hopefully when England are in the final as well. Have a nice little break, and we'll speak to you later in the month.
Okay, see you soon. See you, lads.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.